welcome to Minute 67 of the Great Escape Minute, the daily podcast where we dig into the Great Escape 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and once again, joining me during this week is Jay Cluett, stepping in for Tom. Jay's of the Deep Blue Sea podcast, so thanks for co-hosting again this week, Jay.
Hello, I'm glad to be here, Rob. Thanks for having me.
All right, and once again joining us is Don Wistens, the author of the Great Escape Location website. Thanks a lot for coming back.
Thank you.
All right, Minute 67 starts off with Hiltz and Ives getting out of the cooler, and it goes all the way till Hiltz goes over to grab a tea kettle. Basically, we finished yesterday's minute. Was the discussion between Roger and Griffiths. It switches shots, and we now get to see our hero, our cooler king, being let out of the cooler. Now, the first thing I noticed with this is when both of them went into the cooler, however long ago it was, 10 days ago, 20 days ago, whatever it is, they were both completely covered in dirt.
They were filthy.
and they somehow were able to get their clothes laundered while they were in there.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, Ives still needs to, you know, brush his hair a little bit. Steve McQueen, his hair is parted perfectly.
Yep.
You know.
Immaculate hair, as always, for Steve McQueen. Yeah. My first thought as well was, how did they just sit there picking the dirt methodically from their clothes, their spit on their hands, rubbing it away? Just, I can't understand it. I don't know. But
well, they did have a week or two to do it, so you know that I guess gives them a little bit of time.
Yes.
To they have nothing better to do because Steve McQueen, as everyone notices, doesn't have his ball and bat ball and mitt this time. You know, he's got a little bit more bored, so I guess he's just picking sand and dirt off of himself. You never know.
Yeah.
You know, so the two of them walk out. They walk on towards the gate from the cooler to get out. Basically, you see, what's great is you see that Hiltz gives a really big, he exhales as he's, you know, walking right next to Strachwitz. You know, he walks out and he sort of like huffs and puffs him. I don't even know the right term for it, but he's looking around. He's smirking. He's, you know, he's like, all right, this was easy. You know, it didn't take me that long to deal with this. And he just looks at him and just, you know, gives him a big humph type of thing.
And he's already got the next plan. He already knows
of course.
This is only temporary. He's like, back in here, I guess, for a little bit, but we'll be back outside again soon. It's fine. Just gotta get through this bit.
Or I'll be back in the cooler soon. You know. Then they walk back into the compound with all the prisoners. It always amazes me. There's so many extras in this movie that really have no speaking lines but they all just always stare at the main characters. You know, you see, you don't know if they're staring at Steve McQueen or if they're staring at Hiltz. You know,
bit of column A, bit of column B, I reckon. But when they leave the cooler, the guard opens the door. He like checks McQueen up and down a little bit, just like scanning him. I'm not sure if he's checking he's not stealing something from the cooler or just looking up and down like, oh, this guy again. But it's just a little moment from the extra there, just scanning him up and down, which I like background work.
Making sure that his keys are still in his hands.
You know, yes,
true. That he hasn't found a way to somehow get the keys from him.
Or maybe he's looking up and down thinking, hang on, I lost my soul. His clothes were filthy.
Right, but if you also...
what's going on here?
If you also pay attention, his helmet is crooked when McQueen looks at Drachwitz, so the guard with keys... His helmet is not on straight.
Barely see out of it.
Yeah, exactly. It's, you know, they gave the extra the wrong helmet that day for him to grab. Basically, it goes to the next shot where Hiltz walks into, I guess, his barracks, we all know his barracks is the cooler. So he's maybe someone saved him a bed somewhere.
I hope so.
And he walks into the room and is ambushed by Roger and Mac, who are both there wanting to make sure that everything is done as they want it to be done. You know, they've already formally met before they went into the cooler this time, but, you know, they still don't know each other very well, which is still amazing to me that, you know, Hiltz has been in prison for so long. He's an unknown character to almost everyone else in the compound. You know, here they took all the great escape artists from so many different camps and put them all together. And Hiltz is among them because he's the guy who, you know, has made, I think they said 18 escapes or 17 escapes?
17. So 18 now. At least 18 now because he's just come back from one.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. you know, you'd think that they would have heard about him.
Well, I think Roger knows of him. They just haven't met.
Von Luger knows about him.
So, yeah. He knows his first name for later, for tomorrow. Yeah,
exactly. He'll find out his first name. But, yeah. So he says, good morning, Hiltz. And Hiltz right away says, uh-oh.
This is one of my favorite scenes of the whole film. I love this scene.
Because it's a great scene because McQueen, or Hiltz, shows how intelligent he is. You know, a lot of times he says some really silly things, but here he knows everything that's going on.
But also he does fall for it.
Yeah, of course. He falls for it, but that's later in the week. We'll discuss him actually falling for it. But he's still smart because he's able to read people and know what they want and what they're doing. You know, that type of thing. What they want from him. And, you know, his first line is, well, if you're here to find out if I'm going out again, of course I am. You know,
17 days, 7th of July. So we've got a time frame. We have dates of when exactly this is.
Exactly.
This is the 20th of June.
Yeah. You know, the fact that he says that he's going out in the dark of the moon. Did either of you check when the dark of the moon was in, if they got that right?
Nope. Did they?
No, they did not.
Okay.
The new moon in July 1940. This is 1943, correct? Or is it 1942?
Pass.
Don?
1944, I thought.
It's 1944.
Wikipedia says 42. Late 42. So this would now be 43. Wait, hang on. No, yeah, 42.
Ah, so I was looking in. I was looking in the wrong month.
That's Wikipedia. Wikipedia could be wrong.
It could be, but maybe it's been known to have. Maybe 1942 is correct when you look at it. So, all right, when we go to July of 1942, the full moon, the new moon was on the 13th of July, and the new moon is when it's completely dark. So this should be the 13th, 14th, and 15th. So I think they got it wrong by a week. If we're talking about 1942, if we're talking 1943, they got it wrong by a few days. Also, we could also check 1944 to see if maybe that's where the research got them. Because in 19...
I wonder how easy that would have been to research in 1962 when they're making this. Because we just did a quick Google, we have the information. But 60 years ago, probably wasn't going to be quite as easy. It's just when's the dark of the moon?
Correct.
In July of 1942.
Okay, well, 1944 is also incorrect if that's the case, because 1944, the dark moon is the 19th. So, yeah, for whatever way you look at it, they got the moon phase wrong in the research that they did. I guess I think part of it was the idea to do this around July 4th, because of the fact that everything is, you know, the movie revolves around the 4th of July at some point.
That's true. I mean, they could have... It wouldn't have been much more different to say we're going out on the 13th of July in 23 days, would have been at that point. That wouldn't have changed anything.
True, but in a few weeks when we discuss this, after the July 4th scenes, basically he says he's going out that night. So he's going out on July 4th, which is not the dark phase of the moon.
In either sense. But I suppose it's in the world that the film is set in, it would be darker than in real life. So fine, I'll allow it.
Yes, okay. I mean, it's still interesting, the fact that he says, I'm going out on this day, and Roger's response is, oh, that's the dark of the moon. Meaning everyone knows this. This is information that's readily available to everyone in the prison camp.
Well, it's at least to Mac. It's Mac's job to know everything that's going on in the prison. So I feel like that's something that he would be aware of. He's just the all-seeing eye of everything going on.
Yeah, exactly. Well, later on we find out that he's not, but he tries to be.
Okay.
You know, not this week.
True, yes.
You know, in a few weeks we'll discuss about the potatoes. He doesn't know what they're using potatoes for, you know.
But he knows they're going. He knows that they're being taken and by whom.
Yes.
Doesn't know what for.
Doesn't know what it's for. So he's intelligent. He knows that Hiltz and Ives want to break out and, you know, tunnel out, you know, do their mole act, but he doesn't know about that. But whatever, we'll get to that in a few weeks.
So outside of the big escape, are Hiltz and Ives the only two trying their own little solo game?
In the movie or in real life?
Either.
Okay, no, because in real life there's a famous escape that actually happened from this camp. Don, are you aware of any other big escapes that happened from the camp?
No.
Okay. Well, there was a movie that came out in 1951 called The Wooden Horse.
Yeah.
And that's based on a real escape that happened in this camp a few months before the Great Escape. Because the Germans allowed them to do a lot of sports, so they created a pommel horse, and every day they would put two men in the pommel horse, and they would dig down, and they got out, and I think two or three, I don't remember right now offhand, I think three prisoners actually made it back to England by going out that way. Which I always find it amazing that this movie doesn't reference it at all, because it is a movie that came out, you know, 12 years earlier. It is, that's also based on a book. You'd think that they would have thrown out at some point the fact that, Jeeves and Worcester got out. There you go.
I'm not surprised they don't mention it, because I feel like it might undermine the spectacle of the great escape of the title. If they're like, it's the great escape, and also this other little one that happened halfway through. Because it makes it all the more... It makes it all the more impressive that it got all these people out at the end, and that no one did it at all in the whole duration of being in there. It's just this one at the end. So in the drama of the film, I think it makes sense not to bring it up. And also, at the start, when they're coming to the camp, you've already talked about this, when they're stabbing, they're ramming, the guards are all checking if anyone's hiding in the branches and things. You'd feel like cutting a pommel horse in half would fit under the same... kind of remit of, is there somebody hiding in this clearly hollow thing?
That's true. I don't think that they needed to go into explicit detail of what happened, but to mention in passing that there were escape attempts that succeeded, or the fact that there were more escape attempts. Because, as you said, it looks as if Hiltz and Ives are the only two that are actually trying to go anywhere. You know.
Yeah. Because they say like to let them keep on trying to escape, to throw the guards off their scent. But if I was the guards, I'd be very suspicious that it's just these two again and again and again, and nobody else.
Yeah, I mean the book talks about the fact that there were the reason that the cooler was so big was because they needed a lot of room, because there were a lot of people trying. You know,
just two rooms would have been fine. It's
the Hilton. It's the Hilton. You know, you got the Hilt suite and the Ives suite.
For me, it's not about the moons, Rob. It's about locating the cooler. Where is that iconic cooler? And that was one of the things when I went to Bavaria Studios over the years. I tried to find that cooler, where it was in the woods that we have today. And there's one, if you look at the film, in the top left-hand corner, there's a stone building that they couldn't remove because it was an electric cupboard. And it's still there today. So if you ever, or if your listeners ever go to Bavaria Studios and try and go down the pathway and locate where this electric hut cupboard is, they can work out where the cooler was. But obviously where the cooler is now is hundreds of trees. And again, all the interiors that you've just been discussing was just on the same site. Bavaria Studios had a big studio where they had the tunnel from one end to the other inside the studio, and all the interiors was either done on the site or in the studio. And they would walk to the camp. So John Layton, who I met last year, would try and visualise where everything was. But unfortunately, it's not a museum. It's just hundreds of trees. But wouldn't it be nice to know where that cooler is specifically at Bavaria Studios?
Yeah, that's very true. I mean, my assumption also is because the movie was filmed 60 years ago, so John Layton or anyone else who was around at the time might not remember specifically also. So you're right. It's too bad that they didn't mark it at the time. Yeah. We continue the conversation where they actually ask Hiltz if Ives is actually going to go with him. His response is, yeah, if he wants to. And then Mac has a great line after that. He goes, well, you know that Ives is close to cracking. Now, we knew this before the previous escape attempt. You know, this isn't something new to anyone here.
But it's new information that Mac knows?
Well, he should have known.
I can't...
No, they discussed it last time.
I can't remember that. It's been a while since I've seen the whole film. Not since I was last on. So, okay, fair enough.
No,
I suppose they're reiterating it for the audience, because the last time we just saw Ives previously, and he seemed fine. Walking out of the cooler, he was like, I'm back out in the air.
He just needs a shower. Yeah.
Indeed, yes. But I'm glad I got Ives in my minute this time, because last time he'd be a whole week with no Ives and no Steve McQueen. God damn you.
And here you get a week. You get an entire week with Steve McQueen.
Get a McQueen week and just a few brief seconds of Ives, but that's enough, because I love Ives. He's one of my favorite characters. Yeah. And it's fun to have a Scottish character called Ives. Don may know this. Don, are you familiar with Porridge? The sitcom, the Ronnie Barker sitcom?
I am. Ives' name is Angus Lenny. And when I was growing up as a kid, maybe I'm slightly older than everybody, he was in a TV series called Crossroads.
Oh, yes.
Alias Angus Lenny, and he was a chef, I think, in there. So I grew up with Angus Lenny, alias Ives, in the long-running series called Crossroads. Have you got any recollection of that, Jay?
I am familiar of, I think it got like a re-release. They started doing it again in like the 90s or something. I've never seen it. It's like a, Rob, I think it's a soap opera, I think.
In a hotel.
Motel. Yes. Yeah. On the lines of like an EastEnders or a Coronation Street kind of thing, but set in a hotel.
Angus Lenny, alias Ives, moved on into the TV world, Rob, of a long-standing series.
Yeah, he was in 76 episodes.
He was.
Wow.
Yeah.
He did 6 episodes of Doctor Who as well, which we talked about yesterday.
Shuggy McPhee was his
name. I think that's pretty Shuey.
Shuey?
I'd say Shuey. Oh, Shuey. Yeah, I would guess. But yeah, I like that it's a Scottish character called Ives, just because in the sitcom Porridge, which is set in a prison, another prison film, starring Ronnie Barker and Richard Beckinsale, who's Kate Beckinsale's dad, there was a Scottish prison warden called Mackay, Mr. Mackay, and an inmate called Ives. And it's called him Horrible Ives, but in a thick Scottish accent. And so I just like having a Scottish character called Ives. It always makes me think of Porridge. That's nothing to do with this film whatsoever, but it's just my train of thought.
It's still a connection.
Horrible Ives.
Still a connection. And then basically Queen says, well, maybe it's better for him to go out in the tunnel, which, you know, and the answer is as well, it's much safer for him to go out in the tunnel.
It would be.
Which, it would be. Well, knowing what happens in the end of the movie, I don't know.
Well, I think it again, Cavendish. It's all Cavendish's fault.
Yes.
Don, when I was last on, I blame everything bad that happens in this film on Cavendish. He is the film's true villain. I'm not going to get back into that. But yeah, I feel like had everything gone to plan, it would have been safer for Ives. I don't know how high up in the running order he would have been. Because depending on... He's not going to be integral to the tunnel escape other than causing like diversions.
Well, first of all, according to the original script, Ives and Hiltz do a lot of the digging.
Okay.
They have a lot of scenes of the two of them digging.
He's a mole.
Yes.
It makes sense.
No, but they have them with Danny and Willie digging, which I found interesting that, I mean, I guess Steve McQueen saw the script and said, I'm not getting that dirty. I'll get dirty once. You can
make me dirty for one scene, but I'm actually going to dig.
Exactly.
Manual labor.
All right. Well, do either of you have anything else for this minute?
No.
Don, anything else for this minute?
No, that's okay.
All right, so Don, you want to once again tell people how they can get in touch with you?
Yes. If you go to my website, thegreatescapelocations.com, there is an email address that you can contact me via my email address.
All right, great. Jay, you want to tell people how they can get in touch with you?
Yep, I'll deeply see the podcast, going through the Deeply See franchise one chapter at a time. With myself and my co-host, Mark Hoffmeyer, having a great time over there talking about shark films.
All right, great. And to get in touch with us here, you can send us an email at thegreatminute@gmail.com. You can visit us on Twitter at greatescapemxm. Our website's thegreatescapeminute.com, and you can join our Facebook group, have discussions with us on in the cooler. Until tomorrow, tally-ho!
Tally-ho!
Tally-ho!